Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning and welcome to the last day of our oral argument sitting. We were supposed to be in Atlanta, but the virus had different plans for us. So we've been conducting this week of arguments by Zoom video conference. And thanks to our IT staff, everything has gone really, really well. So we welcome you here to wrap up the week. You'll see a timer on the screen in green. That timer will start going down as your argument winds. When you see it hit yellow, that means that your time is about to expire, so you should begin to wrap up. If we take you beyond the red light, then don't worry, you're on our time and not yours. And with that, Judge Lagoa, Judge Brasher, and I are happy to begin today's cases. Our first case is number 19-13397, Jason Miller versus Gizmodo Media Group, LLC. And we'll start with Mr. Vogt.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. This is Shane Vogt on behalf of the plaintiff below and the appellant, Jason Miller. And today we're asking the court to reverse a summary judgment that was entered against Mr. Miller on his claim for defamation against the defendants. And we're asking the court for that relief because we believe that the decision is based on the legally erroneous conclusion that Section 74 of New York's civil rights law, the statutory fair report privilege, protected the publication of a sealed, indisputably false Florida family court filing.
Mr. Vogt, can I, before you get into the merits of your argument, I just want to make sure I understand what you're arguing and what you're not arguing. We're not taking issue with any of the other rulings made by the district court at summary judgment, right? As I read your brief, your argument is that New York's fair reporting privilege simply does not apply to the publication of the supplement in this case because it was sealed in a child custody proceeding, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, go right ahead.
Just to briefly clarify that point, in the second part of the district court's analysis relating to whether it was a fair and true report, we believe, obviously, that analysis isn't necessary if the privilege does not apply in the first place.
Correct.
And so we are challenging that decision by the court because in Shiles, New York's highest court decided based on public policy that sealed family court filings are exempt from the protections of Section 74. The public policy at issue there in New York is codified in a statute. It's the Domestic Relations Law, Section 235. But it is a very familiar public policy because it's also the public policy of the state of Florida, where the supplement was actually sealed. And it's also the same public policy that's recognized under federal law going back to the Nixon case that's cited in our papers. Notably, that exception does not appear on the face of the New York Fair Report statute. It was something that the courts of New York read into that statute. And they did so for a very important reason, that being that it's almost universally been held that courts do not want their files to become, quote, reservoirs of libelous statements for press consumption. Nor do courts want their court files to be used for improper purposes, such as gratifying private spite or promoting public scandal. And so within that framework, the court in Shiles found there to be an exception to the fair report privilege for sealed family court filings in the state of New York, because those court filings in the state of New York under their statute should not be available for the public to see. And in that respect,
wasn't the issue in Shiles about a conflict between two statutes, right? You had the family statute on the one hand and you had the fair report privilege statute on the other. Wasn't it about a conflict between two statutes?
Judge Asher, I don't believe that there was an actual conflict at the statutes. If you look at the text on the face of Section 235 of the Domestic Relations Law and Section 74 of the New York Civil Rights Law, facially, there is no conflict. Section 74 simply provides that basically you can't bring an action against someone for a fair and true report on a judicial government other proceeding. And Section 235 simply provides that the clerk shall not allow anyone to have access to court files. There's no facial conflict between those two statutes. And in fact, if you go back to the Stevenson decision, which was a predecessor to Shiles and was actually approved in Shiles, and I know in that case, that involved a prior version of Section 74, and it also involved a rule, a court rule, that in essence was the same as what became the statute in Section 235. But Stevenson actually specifically addressed the fact that there is not a conflict between those two statutes, and addressed the very issue that you raised. And just briefly touching on this point on Stevenson, but this is an area where we think that the district court made an error because it, again, focused on the fact that the word public had been removed from Section 74 after Stevenson and said that logic could therefore no longer apply. And the Shiles court actually specifically addressed that issue and still approved of Stevenson and even went through the process of looking at the legislative intent and statements that the governor had made in connection with the enactment of the amendment of Section 74. And in doing so, they said that the removal of the word public didn't have any impact whatsoever on Stevenson. And therefore, Shiles approved it and said that these are the types of court filings that are sealed under New York law, but that we don't want to be published, and therefore they're not going to fall under the protections of the fair reporting privilege.
Mr. Volk, let me ask you a question, please. Are there any appellate division decisions or court of appeals decision after Shiles in this sort of procedural context?
There are not, okay. Your Honor. The only decision I believe, well, Shiles is obviously the highest court. There are some decisions which are pointed out, I believe, in the district court's order that came after Shiles. There are cases like Freeze-Wright, Komarov, the Grob case, the Gubarev case. Several of those are lower court decisions, but none of them are really applicable to the factual situation we have here. And in fact, some of them actually distinguish the situation that we have here. All of those decisions with which the district court relied on in support of its conclusion that, generally speaking, sealed documents are still protected by the Fair Report Statute. Those were all cases that involved governmental action, governmental bodies acting, or criminal cases, which as we've explained, and I know that there's been this argument made that we have manufactured or tried to invent this distinction, but it is clearly in the cases. It's in Shiles, it's in numerous other cases, that there is a supervisory rationale for the fair report privilege, and there is an agency rationale. And the supervisory rationale is what justifies the publication of certain sealed documents, like the ones the district court relied on in cases like Freeze-Wright, Komarov, Grob, even Gubarev. Because in those cases, you're looking at actions that the government has actually taken. This case is distinguishable because here, this supplement was published simply for the sake of publishing it. And that would only fall under the agency rationale for the privilege. And in that circumstance, the law as stated in Shiles, which should have been applied here and is very clear, is that the fair report privilege does not protect the publication of documents that the public has no right to see. And that makes perfect sense. And it's one of the reasons why we think that the district court here strayed, because the district court did not take into account the public policy considerations underlying the fair report privilege or the purposes for which it was enacted, which are not served by the ruling that was made in this case. And so
we assume that, let's just assume for sake of argument, it's a hypothetical, that files didn't exist and we were just looking at this statute, the text of the statute. What would be your argument that you would win under the text of the statute?
Under the text of the statute, if I was doing a strict construction of this statute, it says that the privilege applies to judicial proceedings. And as the court in Zappin recognized, there is a distinction between a legal proceeding and a court filing. That was actually one of the reasons why in Zappin, the court ruled that the privilege applied, because in that instance, it was a publication that related to the proceeding itself, which was open to the public, as opposed to an actual court filing. So that would be one argument that I would make to the court if strict construction were to be applied.
What about a strict construction of Section 235 of the Domestic Relations Law, which says nothing about publication of any kind?
And I think in that instance, Your Honor, if you were strictly looking at Section 235 on its text, I would agree with you that that does not specifically create any exemption in and of itself to the fair report privilege. But in that instance, then what you would do is you would revert back to the common law. And under the common law, and they discuss this in Stevenson and in Shiles, but under the common law, you still couldn't publish something like this for the same reason it can't be published in Florida, and the same reason it couldn't be published under federal law, because if a court had sealed a court filing and it at the same time was a filing that was of the nature of the one at issue here, which is a false and salacious family court filing, those are specifically the types of cases or court filings that the courts have said we don't want those to be published to the public. There's no public interest that justifies allowing those types of things to be privileged when they're published. And actually the district court in its order,
why is that the case? Why as a public policy matter, under New York law, does the public not want to know what is filed under seal?
Because what the court held, and they did this when evaluating in Shiles and in Stevenson, the legislative intent behind Section 235 or its predecessor, which was Rule 278, there the court specifically looked at the balancing of interests between the public's right to know and individual liberty and freedom and protection of reputations. And what the court stated was that...
I don't disagree with you on that point. You said there was no interest in the public learning about things filed under seal. I think that might be a bit of an overstatement.
I agree, Your Honor. And let me clarify that for the court. In a specific instance, when you have something that's been filed under seal, in this context, where it is a family court filing in a contentious case that has false allegations like this, that is a situation where the public's right to know is outweighed by the individual's interest in protecting their reputations and not being exposed to those things being made public. That's the exact analysis that New York's highest court undertook in the Shiles case. And it's the analysis, by the way, that the district court here did not undertake. And that's one of the things that we pointed out in our papers here, is the district court just focused on, well, there's a statutory exception and it can't apply, but it didn't undertake that balancing test. It did not look at the purpose of the statute. It did not look at the public interest being served. And that was one of the reasons that it came to the conclusion that it did.
All right, Mr. Vogt, we've taken you beyond your time, but you've saved your 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Okay. Ms. McNamara.
She's muted. You're muted, Ms. McNamara.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, Elizabeth McNamara on behalf of the defendants. This court is asked to affirm a straightforward application of the absolute privilege under Section 74 of New York's law. It has been broadly and consistently applied, as this court recognized in Knicks versus ESPN. Nonetheless, as you've heard, the plaintiff argues that the one exception to the statute, the Shiles decision, which has been strictly and confined to its particular facts, should apply to the supplement at issue here. But in the 50 years since Shiles, courts have consistently applied the Shiles exception only when two conditions exist. First, that the pleadings and documents at issue were automatically sealed pursuant to DRL Section 235, and second, in a matrimonial action. The plaintiff cites not a single case, and nor was he able to this morning, where Shiles has been extended beyond those two preconditions, neither of which exists here. Nonetheless, the plaintiff argues that Shiles should apply to any sealed document in family court. But again, he cites no law. And in fact, there's an appellate division in New York that applied Section 74's absolute privilege to confidential evidence in a family court proceeding. And I will get to that in a moment, but I want to make
it. Counsel, may I ask you a question with regards to 235? I know it has a language about it's a proceeding in a matrimonial action, but then it also has or proceeding for custody, visitation, or maintenance of a child are filed. So would it suggest then that it could be a family procedure that does not involve a marriage or a dissolution of a marriage, but it could involve a proceeding that deals with a child?
That's a good question, Your Honor, and I'm glad you asked it. There's a key distinction that is being misconstrued here. In New York, there is a matrimonial part of the Supreme Court, which is the lowest court in New York. That division is the only division that applies Section 235. In order to gain entry to that division, in effect, your passport has to be stamped married. That division deals with marriage, dissolution, and as Your Honor can no doubt appreciate, inevitably in marriage situations, you will have custody disputes. That is why there is a reference to custody in that. However,
if you have children, but you're not married, you do not get a passport to the matrimonial section?
No, Your Honor. Under New York law, the exclusive jurisdiction for determinations regarding paternity, custody, and related issue for out-of-wedlock children is governed by the family court. The family court is a separate court in New York. It's a distinct court from the matrimonial part of the Supreme Court. And it is not governed by Section 235. Access to documents in family court is governed by New York Family Law Section 166. So it is a distinct entity, not applicable here. Now, again, I want to underscore at the outset before I turn to, I think it's important to discuss the bookend cases of Shiles and Zapin, from the Second Circuit, because I think together those cases, coupled with the Mills case that I referenced, dictate the affirmance of the decision below. But I want to underscore at the outset that the plaintiff here is not asking this court to apply New York law. He's asking this court to extend it or to change it. He asked this court to adopt a limitation of Section 74 that finds no support in the express language of the statute and no support in 50 years of case law in New York since Shiles. And we submit that this court should not take that invitation up.
Well, why can you address why New York law should apply versus Florida law, since the action is in Florida?
Yes,
and,
Your Honor.
And Florida does not have a distinction between matrimonial, there's only family court, and there is no distinction if you're married or not married.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, the plaintiff, as I think he acknowledged at the outset here, has waived the choice of law issue. The court acknowledged that, the court found that New York law applied. The plaintiff hasn't challenged it, and it is waived on this. But moreover, there's no question, there was no party to this action resides in Florida. The action, the Section 74 privilege, as the court below find, applies to speakers. And the speakers here existed in New York. And it was those, I think, two key principles coupled with the fact that there was no injury in New York that New York law governed. And that is a waived issue in this action, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So now turning back to the bookend cases of Shiles versus Zapin, because again, as I've underscored, we think this necessitates the affirmance. As Judge Brasher, you correctly noted, Shiles addressed not, yes, it discusses policy issues, but it was decided on a conflict of statutory interpretation. Shiles was asked in 1970 to determine whether the net effect of the amendment to Section 74 and removing the word public acted to nullify Section 235, which in various forms had been on the books for 100 years. In comparing the legislative history between those two statutes, the Court of Appeals concluded that there was nothing to support the conclusion that by the amending Section 74, the legislature intended to eviscerate Section 235. And since then, Shiles has consistently been limited to the express language of Section 235. And this narrow reading of Shiles is reaffirmed by the Second Circuit's decision in Zapin. Now, of course, the Second Circuit is routinely called upon to apply New York law. And in Zapin, it's important to focus on what was being argued there. The plaintiff in Zapin argued that under the language of the Shiles decision, it should be applied not just to documents filed in the matrimonial part, but it should also be applied to proceedings. And this wasn't a fantasy by the plaintiff, because more than one quote from Shiles does in fact refer to the fact that Section 74 does not apply to matrimonial proceedings. Nonetheless, in the Zapin case in the district court, the court found, as Judge Brasher correctly noted, that the actual decision of Shiles rested on an interpretation of the statutes and the conflicts of the statute. And the court found that on the plain language of Section 235, it only applied to pleadings and documents filed in the matrimonial part and did not apply to proceedings. And in doing
so— I'm not, Ms. McNamara, if I could interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
I'm not sure Zapin helps you all that much, because in that case, the proceedings that were being reported on were open. And I thought part of Mr. Miller's argument here was that Section 74 doesn't apply to filings which would be sealed or which are filed under seal.
You're correct, Your Honor, but the important point here isn't that Zapin dealt with sealed documents. The point is that in the decision in Zapin, and particularly in section in footnote 11, the Zapin court distinguished between section 235 subpart 1, which automatically sealed documents, and section 235 part 2, where documents could be sealed. And it found
that undisputed here, for purposes of the record, since we're in a summary judgment, that the record here was sealed and has been sealed since it's been, since that document was filed?
No, Your Honor, we have assumed, as the court below did, that upon the filing of the motion to seal by the plaintiff, it acted to seal the document. That is assumed. That there has been no, it is undisputed in this record that when this supplement was filed, it was filed on the public record. And it remained so for 3 days.
Isn't there testimony that's undisputed from the clerk that the supplement has been sealed and not available to the public since it was filed?
Your Honor, actually, that's a misconstruction of the testimony. The testimony at issue was by the clerk, the appellate clerk, Ruggiero, testified. She was the one who oversees, and she testified, and this appears at the record 1151, Your Honor, or thereabouts. And she was asked, what is the process for the clerk's office to designate a document confidential? And the answer is, when the notice of confidentiality is filed, we basically have 5 days to determine whether or not it's confidential. But under the rule is clearly that once somebody files a motion, then that motion basically locks the document until that motion is heard. The testimony that is referred to by the plaintiff was simply a technological issue that often in the record, it appears that the date starts when the supplement was filed. But in fact, the clerk testified unequivocally that the operative decision to seal happens when the motion to seal was filed, which here happened 3 days after, and the document undisputably was not automatically sealed consistent with 235. But let me focus on the Mills case, Your Honor, because I think it's important because you asked, are there any cases? And the Mills case is virtually on point. And we cited it by the defendants, and understandably, they have ignored it. Mills involved the application of Section 74 privilege to investigative news report that uncovered evidence that the Cayuga family court allowed a child to be exposed to the plaintiff despite numerous allegations that the plaintiff had sexually abused the child. It was a neglect proceeding in family court, and this is an appellate division of the New York courts. They held unequivocally that Section 74's absolute privilege applied to reporting on these allegations. And they did so despite the fact that they were clearly could be deemed scurrilous. The plaintiff denied them vigorously. They were highly personal and confidential, and it was in a family court. The Mills decision is in keeping with New York law. And as we've noted, the plaintiff cites absolutely no case law that has extended the Shiles exception beyond the two preconditions that it exists. Specifically, that it must be automatically sealed documents. There's no question here that the supplement was not automatically sealed. Indeed, it was filed as a supplement to a motion that was public on the record. That motion remains public on the record. That motion was reported on and included what could be deemed scurrilous allegations that the plaintiff had sexually and physically abused the Ms. Delgado. Yet that document was on the public record, remains on the public record. The supplement was also filed per Florida law on the public record and was functionally sealed once the plaintiff moved to have it sealed. And notably, that motion has never been decided. There is no court order sealing this supplement. It has been functionally sealed, and we assume for purposes of this appeal, as we did below, that it was sealed at the time the motion was made.
Before you wrap up, I want you to address two things for me. One is, I think the weakest part of your argument is that your argument is more consistent with the dissent in Shiles than the majority. And I'd like you to address that, which is something that the other side argues. And two, I'd like you to address whether this is a question that we can or should certify to the New York Court of Appeals.
Well, let me take the second one first, Your Honor. There's no question that we don't think this court needs to certify it because the law is so clear and the plaintiff has not cited a single case that supports his position other than policy. We're dealing with a statute, a statutory construction. This is not a common law fair report privilege. It's not a constitutional fair report privilege. It's a statutory fair report privilege. And the plaintiff has cited, nor can he, any law that supports that. So while we don't think there would be any need to certify, if the court has questions about the reach of New York law, then by all means, it would be more appropriate for the courts of New York to decide that. We respectfully would suggest rather than this court. As to the dissent issue, Your Honor, I think that it's important to underscore, we're not arguing Shiles doesn't apply, that Shiles is not a legitimate exemption. Of course it is, but we're saying that it is confined to its preconditions, neither of which exists here, which is this specifically that the documents at issue have to be automatically sealed pursuant to Section 235 or a comparable statute that renders them automatically sealed. That does not exist here. That and also that it has to be a matrimonial action. Shiles has never been applied outside of a matrimonial actions. As the Mills Court shows, family court proceedings do apply Section 74. The sealed proceedings have been applied to juvenile, Section 74 has been applied to sealed juvenile proceedings. There are all manner of confidential documents that where Section 74 has been applied to. So if I can, in closing, Your Honor, when you look at the plain language of Section 74 and its 50-year history of broad application, including, as I've indicated, all manner of its application to public and non-public sealed confidential documents, and you consider the 50-year history of Shiles being strictly cabined to only automatically sealed documents in a matrimonial proceeding, there is no basis for the extension of New York law that the plaintiff asked this court to adopt. And again, the plaintiff is not asking this court to apply any New York law that's actually been rendered. It is asking this court to change the law. We suggest that this court should decline this extraordinary request and affirm the decision below. Thank you very much, Your Honors. I'm happy to address any other questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. McNamara. Mr. Volk, you've got your 5 minutes left for rebuttal.
You're on mute, Mr.
Volk. Sorry, Your Honors. Just to be clear, we're not trying to change New York law, nor are we trying to create new law. What we're doing is we're making an argument based on a reasonable and rational interpretation of existing law stated in Shiles, which is consistent not only with the history of dealing with these types of issues in New York, but it's also consistent with the history of the way that courts in Florida and the federal courts have addressed these issues, which
Mr.
is that-
Wolf, what do you do with Mills, a case that I don't think you've addressed in your briefing?
Mills, and I think that we addressed Mills, we may not have addressed it in our briefing here, but I think we addressed it below, but Mills, again, I think dealt with a situation where you have a public proceeding, not specifically a court filing in and of itself that is at issue there. Unless Mills is the case that involved a pro se defendant, I know that there was a case where there was a pro se party that was involved that contained very little analysis of the legal issues, and I don't think even discussed Shiles or most of the governing case law, which again, if any New York court is going to address issues in this context, Shiles should be, and any rational discussion of the issue should be addressed in there because it's the pronouncement we have from New York's highest court, which you know, I know the court is aware is that federal courts are interpreting state law are bound to follow.
Is your argument that something has to be sealed to come outside of Section 74, or that it should be sealed under Section 235? In other words, let's assume, again, only for purposes of this question, that the supplement in this case had been filed without a motion to seal, and it had remained on the public record when the article was published. What do you say about that scenario?
If at the time that the article was published, the court filing that we're talking about was public, was publicly available on the public record, then I don't think that we would have a gripe.
Even though legally it should have been sealed.
Even though legally it should have been sealed. And in all candor to the court, there are situations where—
Doesn't that run against your public policy argument?
It doesn't, because there are case law, and I think we address this issue more in our briefing below, particularly on the motion to dismiss, but there are cases that say that when a government official gives out a court filing that should have been sealed or should have been confidential, in those situations, the media is still protected by the fair report privilege because a government official gave out that document. And specifically, I think in our opposition to the motion to dismiss, there's a name that I'm not recalling for some reason that's given to that doctrine. But then
it seems that your argument is based less on Section 235 and its operation, and much more on whether or not a factual matter, a document was or was not sealed.
Well, no, I think.
I mean, if you have a document in New York, let's say a New York court proceeding in family court or the matrimonial court, and that should be sealed under 235, and everybody makes a big mistake, and it gets filed in the public record, it stays in the public record for 3 months, and a newspaper reports on it, does Section 74 apply?
In that instance, I think Section 74 does apply, because it's a matter of public record. Effectively, it wasn't sealed, even though that was by error or mistake of the clerk of the court. And that situation does happen.
Your argument is not really a public policy argument. It's just a factual one. If something is sealed, even if it shouldn't have been sealed, you can't report on it. So for example, if in this case, the supplement had to do nothing with a matrimonial proceeding or a child custody proceeding, and it was filed under seal, would Section 74 apply?
I don't think it would, Your Honor, because if you look at the Stevenson case specifically talks about this issue and notes that how documents that are not available to the public, be it because they're sealed or confidential, those documents should not be able to be published and under the protections of the fair report privilege. This case, and there is a public policy component of our argument here, Your Honor, because dovetailing back in with the facts, specific facts that we're talking about here, is that we do have a sealed court filing, but also that court filing happens to fall within the category of documents that the public policy of the state of New York, the state of Florida, and under the federal constitution have all said are the type of documents that the public should not have access to because of the harm that giving access to those documents causes and the fact that that outweighs the public's interest to be protected by allowing open access to the court files. I do want to touch briefly on the whole sealing issue.
You're into your red time already, but I'll give you 30 seconds to wrap up if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I just want to clarify this because when Ms. McNamara was asked by Judge Lagoa about this, she referenced, you know, some clerk's testimony discussing the procedure generally for the sealing of court filings, but Judge Lagoa, you were absolutely correct in that the clerk's testimony here was that this specific document was sealed, not available to the public from the time that it was filed. And that can be found at document 171 at paragraph 45 is the citation for that. And then we have the accompanying testimony cited. Regardless, I mean, the district court here assumed that it was sealed. The defendants assumed that it was sealed. And the undisputed testimony established that it was sealed. And under this circumstance, that should not fall under the fair report privilege, because otherwise the district court's decision here is effectively allowing a New York legislature to rule that court records of the state of Florida cannot be effectively sealed. And they grant their citizens the right to publish with impunity sealed court filings from other states, even though doing so violates the public policy of the state in which those court records are found, New York's public policy, and public policy under the federal constitution. And for those reasons, we would ask that this decision be reversed. Thank you for your time, Your Honors.
Right. Thank you both very much. We appreciate the help.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.